They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights.
On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Barthel. Joining me on the Commons today, I have a friend, an old friend, Dr. Ileana Johnson. She's an author, a columnist, a radio commentator, and a teacher, and she has lived in a communist world, so she can come up with exactly what it's like to answer all the people who say to me, wouldn't it be nice? Don't you just love communism? Ileana, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Sue. Thank you for having me again. And I hope our show today will reach as many millennials as possible.
Yeah, I think they're a huge, they need to understand what's going on. I always ask them, if it's so wonderful, why is it that people are risking their lives and their children's lives to get out?
Exactly, and it's not just risking their lives. They were actually getting shot in the back trying to flee or trying to swim across the Danube Delta to or across the Danube River to get to the other side. And, you know, at Checkpoint Charlie, how many have died trying to flee from East Germany to West Germany? So if it's so great, why did they do that?
Why were they running away? What was it like? And what was it like growing up? Because you're from Romania, right?
Right. As a kid, it's kind of harder to see or to know that you are really oppressed and you're poor and you don't really know where your parents are getting food for you and what kind of sacrifices they have to make and what kind of situation they have to put up with, because you don't understand life. You just understand playing and having food and a warm bed to sleep in. But as you go to school and you understand what's going on, still at an empirical level, then you realize that, and you start wondering, but how is it in other places? And why can't we go there as you become a teenager and you want to travel? Why can't we have a passport? Why only the leadership, the communist apparatchiks, have nice cars? And why do they shop at their special grocery stores? And why are they fat and why are we so thin? And why are we always hungry? And why is it always cold in the house? And why don't we have water? And why don't we have hot water? And why do we have to stand in endless lines to buy basics such as milk, bread, flour, cooking oil, and sometimes leave without any because they ran out? And why do we have to use rationing coupons to buy anything? And why can we only afford one piece of clothing and one pair of shoes until they wear out? And why is it this way? And why can we not see other things on television except the dictator telling us how wonderful things are? And you look around and they don't seem so wonderful. And why can't we have medicine? And why are you indoctrinating us nonstop to sing to the dear leader and his wife?
So that was going on when you were kids?
Yes. And, of course, at first, you know, you understand something is not right on a primitive level, but then as you become more educated and you understand more, then you ask yourself more questions. Of course, the parents make sure they teach you, please don't ask these questions in schools because there are informants everywhere and they will come arrest us and you will never see us again. So I always had this tremendous fear in my heart. Oh my God, what if I'm going to open my mouth at an inappropriate time and say something and I go home and my parents are gone and I never see them again because they've been sent to a re-education camp where they died from exposure and lack of food and beatings.
So there was a lack of freedom of speech. I mean, there was a lack of freedom, period.
Period.
And
yeah.
The speech, you were afraid of saying anything or even questioning anything because then you could come home and find that your parents had gone.
Exactly. And I've had relatives who were, especially my mom's uncles, who may have had a little extra land or maybe another home, a country home, and one in the city, and they were actually jailed for being bourgeois, part of the bourgeoisie, and some of them made it out of jail, and some of them didn't make it, died. One particular uncle Paul, I think he was in jail for 7 years. He made it.
For no reason other than having a house?
Other than, yeah, personal property, because private property is not allowed under communism or socialism. You're supposed to be all about collectivism. And then I had a very good friend in Mississippi who was a doctor, a very young doctor in Romania during the early socialist and communist period of Romania. And he was arrested because he had a villa in a resort town called Sinaia in Transylvania. And that had been in his family for generations. It was passed on to him. And he was sent to a lead mine, and he was in jail working in this lead mine for 17 years. I don't know how this man survived because it's a very poisonous environment, very toxic. He survived, and he eventually immigrated to the United States, and he was a doctor for a while in Philadelphia, Mississippi. And his daughter became a pharmacist there, whom he adopted later, and I think she's still a pharmacist for the Choctaw Reservation in Philadelphia, Mississippi. But since then, this gentleman named Petrosevich, he passed away. I really don't know how he survived, but he told my students lots and lots of stories, and it's people with voices like that that make a difference in educating the young, because certainly they don't read enough, and the publications paint a picture of wonder and beautiful and equality of communism, and it couldn't be further from the truth.
You know, one of the reasons I wanted to talk about this, because I wanted to know just how similar communism was to the HOA movement, or to HOAs, where people actually own their property, but really they don't, because somebody else has greater sovereignty over their property. They can decide what colors to paint, what flowers you can plant, how many of them you can plant, and they have the ability to fine you and foreclose non-judicially if you violate any of those rules. So although technically we do have property, it is still for the collective, for the benefit of the collective, because you don't have you don't have complete and total control over that.
That's absolutely true, and unfortunately, people voluntarily sign these contracts to be in these HOA, in these associations. And that's kind of interesting because my husband and I have done so as well. And, of course, we didn't realize how bad it truly was until the house was already completed, and then we were presented with this huge compendium of rules and regulations. And I thought, well, wait a minute, do we own this property or do we not own this property? And, of course, it kind of, I started reminiscing about my grandparents and how when the communists came, the Bolsheviks came and confiscated people's homes, and they confiscated their lands, and they just left them just bare necessities to survive. And in many cases, they moved entire villages off the land in Wow. order to make their famous cooperatives, where the very same people that they robbed then were having to work on this land for the collective good, with very little pay and very little share from the crop that would result from their work. And, of course, the problem was that some of the villagers worked very hard and others didn't. They were slackers, yet everybody got the same measly percentage. And who took the lion's share from their work? It was the Communist Party and their apparatchiks who divided the spoils every which way they wanted. And in cases like the Soviet Union, when there was a bad, or in the Ukraine, when there was a bad crop, which happened sometimes due to weather, they still forced people to pay their share of what the crop should have been. And they took grains from the granary and left them to starve. In other cases, like Holodomor, they actually destroyed their crops, or they piled them on a train that sat on the train tracks. And, of course, the grain and the corn, whatever they confiscated, degraded and rotted eventually, or was eaten by rodents, and the people starved. These trains were being well guarded by men with guns. Prior, of course, they had confiscated the guns so people couldn't defend themselves against these goons. So, yeah, it's sort of like a microcosm of communism, except we were willingly signing this covenant contract sometimes before we read the entire tome of rules and regulations. And, of course, making a comparison to Romania, once all these farmers were moved into granite or cinder block apartments, they basically lost every possible right you can imagine. They were kind of serfs to the Communist Party, and anything they did was and could be used against them, and they would make rules on the fly whenever they wanted to. People had to come out and do quote-unquote volunteer work, but it was forced, so they had to work and beautify the city, sweep the streets, sweep the stairs that went to everybody's apartments. They had to hire mechanics to repair their system that brought water and heat to the apartments. So it was really more like responsibilities 100% and very little rights, if any, that a renter had. And I'm not saying an owner, because very few people actually owned homes anymore. I think maybe in some of the villages they did. They may have had a little bit of land left and they built a house. I think I left when I was about 20, so I personally never got to own a home, but I know my grandparents did, and I do know that they had buried some private personal things so that they wouldn't be confiscated, but they had so many snitches around that it was impossible to keep anything from the Communist Party apparatchiks because they would eventually found out. They would find out. So to give you just one number, for example, the Soviet KGB was staffed by about at least 480,000 people. So
wow.
You're talking about 500,000 people, and approximately a quarter of a million were their sole job was to assist tens of millions of informants. So that's how they kept everybody in check. So even if you wanted to own something more than your next door neighbor, which you, by law you were not supposed to, you were immediately found out, and the economic police would come to your door, and they will do an inventory of what you have, what did you buy it with, where are your receipts, and did you steal this, and so forth. So it's sort of, today we have NSA, of course, and they're listening in on all the devices that we willingly provide information to, then they really had to hire a lot of informants in order to follow all these people and keep them in line.
I'm sorry, go on.
So we were supposed to have economic equality, and it was enforced as well as ideological equality and conformity, but you had to force people to give up their private property and surrender anything private, any kind of interest, to the state. And if you refused, then they would send the goons to your house. They would arrest you. They'd drive you around in windowless vans, telling you you're on your way to Siberia to some gulag. And most people were scared to death and signed the papers. They're giving away their ownership or whatever they had.
Wow.
And in the meantime, once they signed the papers, they realized they were just driven around the village or around the block all night long. So, yeah.
So the coercion, misinformation, flat-out lying, and that sort of thing pretty much seems to be going on today still. You talk about the economic police and that everybody had to have the same thing. And again, I'm still trying to always tie things back to the way things run in an HOA.
Mm-hmm.
So again, you're not supposed to have anything different or more or less than your neighbor.
It's a conformity, right?
It is a conformity. That is so, it's so reminiscent of what you've been talking about. It may not be, hey, we're going to come and confiscate it, although they do if you leave it outside. Some associations will come and confiscate stuff, but it's all making sure that everybody is identical.
Mm-hmm. Well, to compare to our HOA, the houses had to be painted a certain color and a certain scheme. Some had to have white picket fences made out of plastic, which eventually rotted out and you couldn't buy parts for it. Others had to have hedges, which frequently died, and they were expensive to replace, or they were eaten by deer. You had to get approval to build a deck. It had to be a certain size, shape, color, a certain height. To me, having these HOAs, these homeowner associations in this country, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, it's sort of the beginning of implementation of Agenda 21, where they're doing social engineering with moving people into certain areas that are approved by the local government. That's just my opinion. And now they've kind of evolved even further, because now they're building these HOAs where they're actually forcing the association to have some low-income apartments or low-income housing mixed in with very expensive homes, which obviously creates an economic disparity problem, and particularly for the homeowner who spent a lot of money to build a nicer home and save their entire lives, and now they can no longer sell it for what they've invested into it. So that's the next level of social engineering. And of course, the third level, in my opinion, which is all tied to Agenda 21, which has been around for 100 years, just people are just now paying attention, is the fact that they're moving them into high-rise apartments, multiple-use, mixed-use, whatever. So to me, the HOAs were kind of the beginning of this social experiment called Agenda 21.
It's sort of indoctrination. I always wonder if what we're doing is training our kids to sort of toe the line, behave themselves. These kids are growing up in these environments, watching their parents afraid of answering the door, the phone, getting the mail, because they're absolutely terrified they're going to be fined. They're going, you know, they're more threatening letters from the attorneys. There's more this, that, and the other. And everybody's always spying on everybody. Uh-oh. Your brown is not quite the right shade of brown, and you'd better do this, and you'd better repaint, and you'd better do the other. Or, you know, people are getting, Ileana, I kid you not, these are actual stories that have been in the papers in associations, and we're only beginning to see the tip of the iceberg. But people have been fined for having a dusty roof and a dusty mailbox.
Yeah. Some people are fined in our HOA who are not power washing their wooden fence. You know, wooden fences, if they're not painted, if they're let to naturally decay, they're going to get different hues on each slat of the fence, and they're supposed to power wash them. If they don't, they're going to get fined. I remember when we first moved into our neighborhood, everybody had green, beautiful dark green posts for the mailbox and the mailbox itself. And we hadn't even lived here a year, and somebody else came into HOA, and they the board decided that we're all going to have to paint them white, and the mailboxes are going to have to be black. So everybody had to either paint them or go get and buy new ones. And so it's just ridiculous. And now some of them are actually decaying, disintegrating, and we're scared. We don't know what to replace it with. It's very unsightly because the HOA hasn't told us. And why is that? Well, we've gotten to that mentality, which Lenin was talking about in his work. He was talking about the dictatorship of the proletariat, meaning that the power that these people get is limited by nothing, by no laws, and is restrained by absolutely no rules, and it's directly resting on coercion. So these people in the HOA are coercing us with our own money because we pay dues, and the only thing they do for us is pick up trash. And when it snows, we're lucky if they clear the road. So they're using not exactly brute force, but they're using the power of the law with attorneys to sue us and eventually take our home away, and it has happened in many cases.
Yeah.
I know I've heard some of your guests, and I've read some articles, but everybody seems to forget in the Declaration of Independence, we're endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable
rights. Yeah.
In other words, they're supposed to honor our value as individuals, not as part of a collective, and they're forcing us to be in this collective. It actually tells us that the government has no limit on their power over us, the individuals. So they're violating the Declaration of Independence, of course. And likewise, in the communist governments, they have no limits. We didn't have a Declaration of Independence, and all they cared about was their power and the collective. And although we're all in this collective, individually, if we wanted to claim a part of this collective, we couldn't. We were immediately sent to jail. So the individual is just totally insignificant. It's entirely dispensable in this cog of a huge political communist machine. And if your number one duty is to be part of the collective, and if you stop the operation of this huge machine, communist machine, they get rid of you. They sacrifice lives of millions of individuals just to keep their power.
They'll destroy total families. I mean, that's what scares me. And I think that kids, probably the millennials, you talked about the millennials at the, you know, at the beginning, probably the millennials are looking at this thinking, oh, well, we'll be protected under communism. And they don't realize how similar what we're going through is to communism.
Well, it is. And, you know, they keep saying, well, it just didn't work because it just wasn't done properly. So every communist experiment in every country I have studied, including the Romania in which I lived, communism has failed miserably. It still exists today in China, North Korea, Vietnam, Laos, Cuba, but they have huge problems. And, of course, now you have it in Venezuela. You have, you know, diehard socialism. In order for these people to maintain the reign of power, probably with the exception of North Korea, they had to make, and Cuba too, they had to make some concessions to capitalism, and China has made huge concessions. So it's not really entirely communist anymore. They do allow private property. If you don't respect private property, society, their communist society, is going to crumble. Because Marxism was founded on the idea that you can't have private property, that you can't acquire anything more than your next-door neighbor. But that's impossible because from the beginning of time, humans have been enterprising and they claimed private property based on their tribe, on their clans, on their family, based on the monarchy, nobility, you name it. Private property was always at the center of existence throughout human history.
And included in owning private property was the ability to do with it as you pleased.
Exactly.
So if you had a house with a little bit of land, it didn't have to be a whole lot of land. It could be just a typical suburban house with a small front yard or a small backyard or both, where you decide you're going to grow your own food. Some cities have said, all right, you can have chickens in the backyard, and this is just driving everybody insane because, gee whiz, who needs to have fresh eggs from their own garden, right? From their own stock of chickens. But I've had people on who have tried to grow food, and if they have no sun in the backyard, they've grown it in the front yard. They've had not just HOAs, but they've had actual city governments come after them and tell them that that is not appropriate, that they can't grow vegetables, they can't grow anything in their front yard except grass. And it has to be a certain kind of grass, and it has to be kept at a certain height and a certain color, and you have to water it, and, you know, it just goes on and on and on and on. But isn't owning private property the ability and the right to do with it as you please? So what if you had a few extra cucumbers that you grew than your neighbor had?
Oh, if you did, under communism, they came and confiscated it. I don't know where they took it. They certainly didn't share it with the neighbors. If you had something that, let's say, an uncle has willed to you, you are not allowed to keep it because you had in excess of property that your neighbors had. Sometimes people bartered with each other for food that was either grown or stolen from wherever they worked. And if the informant knew and they were ratted on, they were both arrested and made to restitute to the Communist Party whatever difference in property they were having that they were not allowed, they were not supposed to have. So it was, even if you had a little piece of land and you put in a little garden, and particularly in the village, you still had to share it with the people in the village. You couldn't keep it all to yourself. Sometimes Grandpa would come and bring us food into the city because we were starving or we couldn't find it. But otherwise, they were supposed to share it with somebody. And it was kind of hard to share food with people who were genetically lazy or tended to be lazy when you worked so hard for it. So that's why communism did not work, because people are not so altruistic that they would be willing to share all the fruits of their labor continuously with people who were slackers. And, of course, we had the experiment at Jamestown when they were all given, land to work it collectively, and they almost starved at the end of the year because some worked and some didn't. And those who didn't work, they still got their fair share. So it doesn't really work. Communism devastates economies and destroys liberty because property rights are not guaranteed, because everything you work for is stolen by the government, and you have to wait for them to give you handouts.
And that's basically what communism is all about. It's what the government allows you to have regardless of how industrious you are and how creative you are and how hard you're willing to work, right?
Exactly. They rob you of self-reliance, initiative. They actually treated initiative as a crime. So people eventually give up. They no longer want to make decisions for themselves in big matters or small matters. They expect the government to make the decisions for them. They wait for orders. So in essence, communism is killing the work ethic, the sense of responsibility, and creates this huge sense of serfdom and dependence on the government.
So what's it like when you've been told your entire life what to do, what to eat in essence, because you're going to eat whatever you can get and you're going to get whatever you're allowed to have? And so you're told what to eat, you're told where to go to school, you're told what to study, you're told where to live, you're told what to do. So you're brought up like that. What happens when you're out in the real world and all of a sudden you've got to make decisions for yourself?
Well, the problem is that you don't, or you make poor decisions because you're no longer adept at making good decisions. For example, under communism, all the productive resources or means of production are nationalized, and which means that it's not liberating you from owning things because now it's all collective. You become just a slave to the ruler, the communism, and because you have all these shortages all the time, because they're not very good planners of the economy, these commies, they're usually people with very little education. They're just good talkers, good gabbers. The people actually become more materialistic than you can imagine, because you develop these rapacious instincts of whatever little you have, you want to hang on to it because you don't know if you're going to have it tomorrow. And that's the reason why all these Eastern Bloc countries, after they've been so-called liberated in 89 from communism, I don't really believe communism went away. It just kind of went underground and regrouped personally. But when they were so-called freed and the Soviet Union broke up into smaller states, they had a hard time making a transition to a real market economy. Why is that? Because in a market economy, you have respect for property rights, for private property, and for the individual. Well, under communism, people have lost sight and the feeling of what it was like to own anything, to say, this is my property. And instead of communism getting rid of materialism, so to speak, which is tied to owning property, it actually makes materialism worse, because whatever little you own, you want to hang on to it. And I'm talking about personal possessions. So they had a hard time getting to free market, because people understood, oh, we're free now, let's just steal until there's nothing left to steal. And while everybody was concentrating on that, how can I take away as much as I can from this collective property before the law wakes up, the people at the top, of course, stole the lion's share, and they broke down industries, the factories, they sold land, they sold forest, and they stripped the mining rights, or they sold them to foreign entities. And by the time they woke up, there was not as much left that was actually in hands of the local population that could actually say, be said, okay, this is in the patrimony of the country, and let's, be careful who we give it to. They have really, really struggled. And one of the things that upset me was these so-called environmentalists don't realize that one of the most polluted places in the planet, other than third world countries, were actually a former communist countries. And why is that? Well, about one-sixth of the Russia's territory, for example, was uninhabitable because of pollution and other environmental devastation. The water, the air, soil, crops, forest lands, they have deforested so much land in Romania, and they planted nothing in its place, and they sold the timber. I remember growing up in southern Romania, which my hometown was heavily industrial. We had about 7 refineries. During World War II, for example, we furnished a lot of the German petroleum, for the war machine, because we were allies. But anyway, so it was a very polluted area, but the communists made it even more polluted because they had no means in place to protect the environment, because our lives were worthless. Individual lives didn't matter to them. And one example of these countries that were so polluted were countries like China, India, Peru, Russia, Ukraine, Zambia, Azerbaijan, and they're still struggling with this pollution. Obviously, it takes a lot of money to, once you've polluted the soil and the water, it's very, very hard to redress that pollution unless you're willing to spend billions and billions of dollars.
Is that because they've got this total lack for a lack of respect for property, so they're willing to just tear it down and not worry about it?
Exactly. Just get the spoils off of it, exploit whatever is exploitable, and then leave. There's a mountain chain in western Transylvania that has a lot of gold. I'm sure some people have heard about it in the news, but this Canadian company was trying to come and exploit more gold to the detriment of destroying an entire mountain and the way of life of hundreds of villages. And, of course, finally they woke up and people have said no. But that's not the case in every instance. I'm glad that happened, that they said no.
You have a blog that you write, and I recently read something you wrote about meeting up with a cousin for the first time in, I don't know how long, since you were children.
A long time, yeah.
Since you were children. And I was just absolutely fascinated because you were comparing notes. And you were talking about how you grew up as an only child, and whatever food there was split equally between you and your parents in threes. And he was one of three kids, so there were three kids? Five?
There were five.
Five kids?
There were five kids, yeah.
Oh, my gosh, and the parents. So whatever food they were able to get was put on the table.
Right.
And it was, you know, everyone for himself.
Yes, exactly.
And so the people who were faster got to eat more, but regardless, everybody was always hungry.
Yes, that's true.
And that's because there was no food.
Right. Well, up until that point, which was, you know, after the communists came to power, you know, everybody had some property and they raised gardens and they had plenty of food. They had extra. They took it to the market and sold it. They had farmers markets. But once the communists came to power, they confiscated everything. That did away with the people's ability to feed families, and most farmers had lots of kids. My mom's family, they had six children.
Well,
my grandmother had eight children. How do you feed that many mouths if you no longer have as much property, as much land to grow food? And some of the food, they sold it for cash so they could buy whatever else they needed that they couldn't produce on the farm. So, yeah, it was very hard to raise that many children once the communists confiscated property. Now, after 89, when communism fell in my country, Romania, in order for them to become part of the European Union in 2007, they were forced to give back whatever was confiscated from each family. And of course, can you imagine the backlog in the legal system?
Oh, wow.
And of all the lawsuits and all the arbitrations, and did you have paperwork to prove X, Y, and Z? And the people who got back beautiful buildings, all of a sudden they decayed because they didn't have the money to maintain them. Because along with private property, they confiscated bank accounts. I know when my mother came to this country, she came on a visit and defected, didn't go back. They confiscated everything she had ever owned. And then they did the same to my dad when he passed away.
So never got any of it?
No, absolutely. I didn't even get some of my books. I had a pretty nice library with books. I used to collect books. I was an avid reader. I don't even have any of those. I had some paintings and some watercolors that I made because I went to an art school for 3 years. Those were confiscated as well. I'm sure they had value to some Communist Party member.
Yeah.
Maybe they were decorating their homes. I don't know. But, yeah, I don't have anything other than just a few pictures from my childhood and from my adolescence.
How when did you leave? How old were you when you left?
I think I was almost 20. I had I did 2 years of college in Romania, so that would have put me at about 19 something. Almost 20. Mm-hmm.
So you really never had much of a chance to do a whole lot other than be a kid, go to school, grow up, and you started your college career there.
Right. I didn't actually work for pay, so to speak, for the communist government. I did 2 summers of work, internships, while I was in college.
So were you told what to study? I mean, we hear these stories about your talents and being told, well, you're very good at figure skating, therefore you're going to grow up to be a figure skater, and if you're one of the chosen ones, then your life and your family's life has gone up considerably.
That's true.
But were you told what to study and what to become?
Well, that usually depended on whether your parents were Communist Party members. If they were, my parents were not. If they were, you automatically were assured that you will go to college and you will get in. You would be a shoo-in, so to speak. The rest of us who came from a blue-collar background, like my parents, we had to really, really work hard in school in order to pass all the stringent exams in order to get into a college of our choice. And competition was very hard. It was free, yes, but if you had 100 people who made straight A's and you could only educate 50, obviously 50 exceptional students never got to go to college. It was very competitive. Depending on your talents, you could go to a liberal arts type of high school, or you could go to a science-based high school, or you could go learn a trade if you were not very academically inclined. After 8th grade, you learned a trade. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's something that is being lost in this country because everybody wants to be a chief in social work or psychology or journalism, and nobody wants to be something that requires more stringent science-based classes like an engineer or an architect or a mechanic or a designer, a computer designer. You had some choice in that regard, but once you were in that school, you have to study whatever subjects they gave you each year. And among them, you had to study scientific socialism and a lot of ridiculous subjects that had no bearing in reality.
So, and then you came to the States after 2 years of college, or did you go somewhere else?
No, I came to the States, yeah. And I actually had to pay back all my education, even though it was free. Once I came here and they stripped me of my Romanian citizenship somehow, because I didn't become a American citizen until 82, 4 years later, all of a sudden I had no Romanian citizenship rights. So I had to pay back all my education because now America was going to benefit from this wonderful education I got. So I said, okay, I'll pay if that's the only way I can get out. And this functionary, this bureaucrat, calculated it to be $150. And my husband, soon-to-be-my husband, just busted out laughing because it was just $150. A Mississippi State tuition at the time was like $1,700 a semester. Anyway, so we sold a CD, not a CD player, but a cassette player, which were a very hot commodity in these Eastern European countries, blue jeans and cassette players. So I think he bought a cassette player for maybe $100, and we sold it for $150, and we paid my education bill.
You got out that way.
For 14 years of schooling, right.
Oh, that was for 14 years of schooling.
That was for 14 years, yes.
It wasn't your two years of college?
No, it was college. It was not my 2 years of college. It was the entire
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I wished I still had that piece of paper.
Wow. And so the fact that they took all of everything that your parents had, that didn't matter, right?
No.
They confiscated all of that, but you had to repay your education. All
right.
Of $150, that's amazing.
I know. I had actually some very good teachers in a lot of subjects throughout those 14 years. I'm discounting, of course, the socialist economics and scientific socialism, that sort of thing. I don't consider that good education, but the rest of it was very good. I had good math and science. I had calculus. I studied three different languages. So, yeah, music, art. So, yeah, it was pretty cheap, I thought.
Well, yeah. So, have you been back to Romania since you left?
Yes, I have. I've been back one, two, three, four, five, six times. When I came in 78, I went back in 79, and I went back in 85, and then after that, I just couldn't go back anymore because I would see people suffer more and more because Ceausescu got worse as time progressed in the 80s. And I couldn't help these people in any way. I was a college student. I didn't have any money. And so I stopped going. And then my dad passed away, and they actually killed him. And then I did not go back until about 25 years after the fact, and only because my husband dragged me.
And so what has anything improved or not really?
Actually, yes. In many respects, it has improved. People can come and go as they wish, as long as they have money to pay the flight and the passport fees, and they can accumulate property, and they can build a home, and they have pretty much actually more freedoms in many respects than we have here. They can have weapons if they want.
That's interesting.
I'm sorry?
I said that's interesting, more freedoms that we have in the freest country in the world.
But they do have corrupt politicians just like we do here. And they have the globalist movement that just like we do here. And they have a lot of nonprofits now which are tied to funding from George Soros. And they have the millennials, and they have the resist movement. And if you ask them, what are you resisting for, they have no idea. They're all young people just like here. And they're just waxing and waning romantically about communism because they have no idea what they're talking about. They were born after 89, so and most of them are diehard communists. So
it hasn't gone away, which does not bode well for the HOA movement, because I don't think that's ever going to work either.
No, I don't think it is. I think I'm expecting it to eventually die away. I don't know how soon, but I think HOA will become a mammoth, eventually a skeleton.
Well, I've been predicting that for years, and I see no signs of it happening yet. Ileana, we're almost out of time, so I really want to thank you. But before I let you go, I want you to, A, give us the URL, the address, for your blog, because you've got some really great posts on there that you've written.
Well, absolutely. I write on RomanianConservative.blogspot.com, and I also post my articles on my website, IlianaJohnson.com. And, of course, all my five books are available at Amazon and paperback and Kindle.
Well, thank you so much. That's great. I know that a lot of people were very interested the last time you were on, And I thank you for sort of explaining the similarities, because I see that. And I see the indoctrination, and that scares me. Because, yeah. I don't know where it's going to end. Obviously, communism didn't work, doesn't work.
No, so, it will never work.
So thank you so much, Ileana. I hope you will come back again sometime.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me again.
And thanks to everybody for tuning in. Don't go away.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to Justice 4HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.